Nehemiah, shortest man in the Bible, according to some. Bildad the Shuhite might be in competition with him. Bildad the Shuhite from the book of Job was also a pretty short guy, apparently. But Nehemiah might, you know, between the two of them, they can work it out who's the shortest. But greatest. He is a great man, Nehemiah. We're discovering that Nehemiah in Hebrew, is a really amazing man, a man of great compassion and really of action, a man of prayer, very spiritual man, but really a man's man as well, really strong, tough, and willing to get his hands dirty. So we're studying this fascinating account. So the book of Nehemiah is all about the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem. The rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem. This took place during a time which we call the post-exilic period, after the exile. The Jews had gone into exile to Babylon. Before that, they had gone into exile to Assyria. Later, they went to Babylon and exiled in Babylon around 586 BC. And they were there for around 70 years, and then Jews from Babylon were starting to come back out of Persia. We had enough of Persian food, although I think it's really great. It was enough in Persia. Don't worry, Maddie, you can cook me your shashliks anytime. I love your shashliks. It was time to come out of Persia and come back to Israel. And in fact, there were three returns back to Israel. The first one was under Zerubbabel. And he came back and he built the temple again. He rebuilt the temple. And then Ezra came back again and he brought some reform. And then Ezra came back around 538 to 432 BC. And he built the walls. Now for 140 years since the destruction of Jerusalem in 586, the walls of Jerusalem were destroyed. There was no way to defend the city. So when they came back, they rebuilt the temple, but the city was indefensible. It couldn't really be built up. There was a temple, but that's about all. And so we're discovering that the trials, the tribulations, the conflicts, and also some of the lessons that Nehemiah learned, spiritual lessons, are great for us today. They're really good for us as we walk through life, and there's always challenges and conflicts as we serve and grow and as we are leaders, all of us in some way or another. And we're finding also that the book of Nehemiah is a great encouragement to us as we seek to rebuild the walls of Beit HaMashiach as well. So let's go through this book once again. We're in the second section now. We've already done chapters 1 to 6, which is all about the rebuilding of the walls. Last week we saw that they completed that. Now we're in a section from chapter 7 to 13, which is already about restoration of the people. And today we do chapter 7. So the story so far, Nehemiah in the city of Susa has a job as a cupbearer for the king to taste the wine, a good job, which he is willing to let go, because he hears about the plight of his fellow Jews back in Jerusalem that are living under great shame and contempt. He is told about this by his brother Hanani. Hanani comes and tells him about this and introduces some people from Judah. And Nehemiah is very moved, and he's moved enough to pray for around 3 or 4 months about it before he appeals to the king of Persia to let him go and to go back to Jerusalem, his hometown or his homeland, to go and repair the walls. And so at the beginning of the book, we read of how Nehemiah came back to Jerusalem, how he scoped the work, and then he inspired the people to get the job done. In chapter 2 of Nehemiah, we're introduced to two losers, really, Sanballat and Tobiah. These are the people who really oppose Nehemiah from the start to the finish, and they get in the way of the work of God. They're very self-seeking people. They're manipulative. They're nitpicking, critical. And they cause all sorts of drama for Nehemiah. They make his work really difficult. Have you got anybody like that at work? Well, you need to pray for them. Last week I mentioned that you even need to forgive them. But there are other things you can do as well. And Nehemiah shows us what he did. So this opposition really escalates later into a full-blown evil coalition against him. Because the people didn't want the Jews to return back to Jerusalem. They didn't want the worship of the God of Israel in Jerusalem any longer. So they opposed the work. But Nehemiah started to get the work done, and in chapter 3 we read of the names of the men and women and the children who stood up for the Lord and were prepared to get their hands dirty, to risk their lives, to rebuild the city. And so in chapter 3 we have all these names. Their names are written there and they'll never be forgotten. And may we be like them too in our zeal to serve the Lord. The rebuilding of the work begins in earnest and passion. And in chapter 4, they make some serious progress until opposition really escalates. And what we see in chapter 5 then, that they really have to deal with this opposition. They have to deal with this evil coalition. Now we have Sanballat and Tobiah, the original two opponents. But then there's Geshem, the Arab, that joins their ranks, and also the Ammonites that join them, and the men of Ashdod. They're the Philistines. The Philistines, of course, have always been the enemies of God. They join in opposition against Nehemiah and the Jews in Jerusalem. And they start to bring fear tactics, fear of attack. And also the people are tired. They've been working really hard. So when you're tired and there's a threat of attack, it's easy to panic. And a little bit of panic started to happen, and Nehemiah had to settle things down. And he showed them that they need to be people of prayer and action. They prayed, and then they continued the work. They prayed and continued to work, and they worked with a sword in one hand and a shovel in other. So one for protection, the other one to do the work. It slowed the work down, but they still continued. It's a good lesson that in life we need to continue to pray and continue to really get the job done at the same time. Last week in chapter 6, we saw that nearing the completion of the work, and the walls were all complete, but just before the gates were put in place, that opposition again mounts up. This time it's not opposition against the entire people of Judah, the Jews, but this time the opposition was targeted. It was targeted to get Nehemiah out of the way. They really attacked Nehemiah directly, intentionally, to take Nehemiah out. There was a three-pronged attack against Nehemiah last week. We looked at this. There was an attack to divert him from the work that he was doing. Come down, have a cup of coffee with us. Let's talk. And, of course, Nehemiah realized this was a devious plan by the evil coalition, and he didn't join with them for a cup of coffee. Then, also, they tried to disgrace him. They tried to discredit his name and spread rumors about him, so that the king in Persia will hear about him and take his head off. And so that was the second pronged attack. The third was just simply to deceive him spiritually. They hired a so-called spiritual person to prophesy against Nehemiah. And so this guy brings Nehemiah, comes to Nehemiah and says, well, you need to run and hide in the temple, because they're going to try and kill you. God says, run and hide in the temple. Nehemiah realizes, that's not God talking to me. And he realizes that this wasn't someone hired to deceive him spiritually. And so he didn't follow that advice, and he stayed the attack. It was a very real threat on his life. Despite all that, we read at the end of chapter 6, or verse 15, it says, the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. And so it's a kind of really matter-of-fact statement that almost seems like a huge anticlimax. All this stuff has happened, and there's just one verse that says, and the wall was completed in 52 days. The wall was broken down for 141 years before that. Now it took them 52 days to complete it. Nehemiah had just completed this job that hadn't been done for so long. It was intense, but he managed it, inspired by God. He kept on praying a prayer, which I love. It says, God, strengthen my hands. And he got that job done. And once his enemies saw that the work of God had continued and that the wall had been completed, they all became afraid and they lost their confidence. The kind of opposition just fell apart. They realized they were fighting a losing battle. Now today we're going to see how Nehemiah begins to reestablish the city of the great king and begin to restore the people of God. So I've asked Callum again to read chapter 7 for us, and feel sorry for the poor guy. It's a chapter that has just got a whole lot of very difficult names in it. So, in the tradition of remembering the names, why are we reading this? It's not to put you to sleep. I remember when I first started to read the Bible, when I was being encouraged to really seek after God. I remember getting, starting in the beginning, Genesis, yes, that was pretty good. You know, Exodus, yes, a lot of exciting things. Numbers. And then you get to all the genealogies, and that was good bedtime reading because it helped you to fall asleep. But there's good reason for us to remember the names. Remembrance is very important, which is why I remembered and read out the names of the people that were killed last weekend. And here we have the names of the people who worked and who returned to Jerusalem to rebuild the city. Thank you.
Well, just before we start, I had a bit of experience with this in Ethiopia, where I met all my in-laws. So this feels like a bit of a list of all my in-laws from Ethiopia, from Helen's family. So just before we start. So after the wall had been rebuilt, the doors set up, and the gatekeepers, singers, and Levites appointed, I put in charge over Jerusalem my brother Hanani, along with Hananiah, the commander of the fortress. For he was a man of integrity and feared God more than many. I said to them, "The gates of Jerusalem must not be opened until the sun is hot. While those are still on duty, have them shut and bar the doors. Also appoint residents of Jerusalem as guards, some at their post and some near their homes." Now the city was spacious and large, but there were few people within it, and no houses were being built. So my God put into my heart to assemble the nobles, the officials, and the people to be registered by genealogy. I found the scroll of the genealogical record of those who formerly returned. I found the following written there. These are the people of the province who returned from the captivity of the exile, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had taken away, and who returned to Jerusalem and to Judah, each man to his own town. Those who came with Zerubbabel were Jeshua, Nehemiah, Azariah, Remiah, Nahamani, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mizpereth, Bigvai, Neham, Bana. The number of the men of Benai Yisrael was the sons of Parosh, 2,172. The sons of Shephatiah, 372. The sons of Arah, 652. The sons of Pahat Moab, from the sons of Jeshua and Joab, 2,818. The sons of Elam, 1,254. The sons of Zatu, 845. The sons of Zakai, 760. The sons of Benui, 648. The sons of Bebai, 628. The sons of Asgard, 2,328. The sons of Adonikam, 667. The sons of Bigvai, 2,067. The sons of Adin, 655. The sons of Atar of Hezekiah, 98. The sons of Hasham, 328. The sons of Bezai, 324. The sons of Harif, 112. The sons of Gibeon, 95. The men of Bethlehem, and Netophah, 188. The men of Anatoth, 128. The men of Bethazmaveth, 42. The men of Kiriath Jearim, Nephira, and Beeroth, 743. The men of Ramah and Gat and Geba, 621. The men of Michmas, 122. The men of Bethel and Ai, 123. The men of the other Nebo, 52. The sons of the other Elam, 1,254. The sons of Harim, 320. The sons of Jericho, 345. The sons of Lod, Hadid, and Ono, 721. The sons of Senah, 3,930. The Kohanim, the sons of Jediah, of the house of Jeshua, 973. The sons of Immer, 1,052. The sons of Pasha, 1,247. The sons of Harim, 1,017. The Levites, the sons of Jeshua and Kadmiel, from the sons of Hodiah, 74. The singers, the sons of Asaph, 148. The gatekeepers, the sons of Shalom, the sons of Ater, the sons of Talmon, the sons of Akab, the sons of Hatita, the sons of Shobai, 138. The sanctuary servants, the sons of Zihar, the sons of Hasufa, the sons of Tabiot, the sons of Kiros, the sons of Sirah, the sons of Paddan, the sons of Lebanah, the sons of Hagabah, the sons of Salmai, the sons of Hanun, the sons of Gidel, the sons of Gahar, the sons of Reaiah, the sons of Rezin, the sons of Nekoda, the sons of Gazim, the sons of Uzzah, the sons of Baseah, the sons of Besai, the sons of Menuim, the sons of Nephishesim, the sons of Bakbak, the sons of Hekufa, the sons of Haher, the sons of Bazlith, the sons of Mehida, the sons of Hasher, the sons of Bakbos, the sons of Sisera, the sons of Tamar, the sons of Naziah, the sons of Hatifa, the sons of Solomon's servants, the sons of Sotai, the sons of Sephereth, the sons of Perida, the sons of Jala, the sons of Darkon, the sons of Gidel, the sons of Shephatiah, the sons of Hittel, the sons of Pokereth, Hazabim, the sons of Ammon, all the temple servants and the sons of Solomon's servants, 392. Now, the following were the ones who came from Talmalai, Talhasha, Cherub, Adon, and Immer, but they were not able to identify their ancestral houses or whether their descendants were from Israel. The sons of Deliah, the sons of Tobiah, the sons of Nekoda, 642. Also of the Kohanim, the sons of Habiah, the sons of Hakoz, the sons of Barzillai. Their ancestor took a wife from the daughters of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and subsequently was called by their name. These sought their names in the genealogies, but were not found. So they were disqualified from the priesthood. The governor said to them that they should not eat any of the most holy things until a Kohen arose with Urim and Thummim. The whole congregation together was 42,360, not including their male and female servants. These were 7,337, as well as 245 male and female singers. There were 435 camels and 6,720 donkeys. That's a lot. Some from among the family leaders contributed to the work. The governor gave to the treasury gold drachmas, 1,000, bowls, 50, and priestly tunics, 500. Those from the heads of ancestral lines gave to the treasury for the work gold drachmas, 20,000, silver minas, 2,000. The rest of the people gave gold drachmas, 20,000, silver minas, 2,000, and priestly tunics, 67. So the Kohanim, the Levites, the gatekeepers, the singers, some of the people, and the temple servants, even all Israel, dwelt in their towns. Then the 7th month came, and the B'nai Israel were in their towns.
All right. Well done. All right. Are you all still awake? All right. It's well done. It's quite a hard task to do that.